Well, thank you so much for inviting my wife and I to come and really spend some time with you this weekend and come alongside you and asking these questions as we've just heard. And I was just speaking with Sindra yesterday over dinner and just talking about how just the times over dinner and conversations has, can imagine, such a ministry to each of you as we leave today and get to support each other in your vocations, in your work as Christian psychologists. Before I start, I want to pray. This is from Psalm 145. Great is the Lord and highly to be praised. I will exalt you, O God, my King, and bless your name forever and ever. Every day I will bless you and praise your name forever and ever. Great is the Lord and highly to be praised. His greatness is beyond all searching out. One generation shall praise your works to another and declare your mighty acts. They shall speak of the majesty of your glory, and I will tell of all your wonderful deeds. They shall speak of the might of your marvelous acts, and I will also tell of your greatness. They shall pour forth the story of your abundant kindness and joyfully sing of your righteousness. The Lord is gracious and merciful, long-suffering and of great goodness. The Lord is loving to everyone and his mercy over all creatures. All your works praise you, O Lord, and your faithful servants bless you. Almighty and everlasting God, increase in us your gift of faith, that forsaking what lies behind and reaching out to that which is before, we may run the way of your commandments and win the crown of everlasting joy. Through Jesus Christ, your Son, our Lord, who is alive and reigns with you in the unity of the Holy Spirit, one God, now and forever. Amen. So it seems I'm on the tail end of a wonderful selection of talks about the nature of belief, what it means to believe, and particularly what it means to believe as a Christian, and how to believe in your specific jobs and who you are as psychologists. Our last session that Emily spoke about was on atheism, and in many ways I want to deepen, I guess, this question, this response about those who don't believe. And so I'll be talking today about, my first talk will be on atheism, ideology, and belief. What do we believe in when we don't believe in God? So maybe a bit of background about me first, since you've already heard about my wife. So I am a native Californian as well, so I seem to be abandoning sunshine more and more as since we now live in Scotland. But I'm an expatriate, so living in Britain now for the last 8 or 9 years, I probably feel more British than I do American any longer. The way I can probably tell is when people come up to me in line and start talking to me without me knowing them, I'm wondering why they're talking to me. This is a very British thing, the kind of British reserve. So even when I go home, I feel like they said, where are these people that talk to me? I don't understand it. But to give you a little background of my kind of theological, religious journey, my personal faith, I grew up in a non-denominational evangelical church in California. My parents were part of the kind of Jesus movement in the 1960s. They were both hippies and then became devout Christians. And then when I came to Oxford in 2004 to be a student, I was introduced to the Church of England and absolutely fell in love with it. And that's where I am today, is the Church of England and the Anglican Church. So presently, I'm a theologian. So a theologian is someone that likes to think about God, likes to talk about God, likes to think about thinking about God, in all these facets. It's a long tradition in the church. And as we'll come to see in the second talk, that much of what I do is dealing with doctrine, right? So what does it mean? What are the things we actually believe in the Christian faith? But I have much broader interests as well. So my first job was I was actually a scientist or an engineer. So I worked in the aerospace industry. And so I have broader interests than just kind of theology. And since my wife is a psychologist, you know, oftentimes we have lots of things to talk about related to faith, theology, and psychology. In fact, Linda, Emily, and I were with Justin Barrett as he was working on a book, and every week he'd kind of write a chapter, and we'd all kind of sit around and discuss what we, you know, thought about it. So I've always been interested in psychology, at least through my friends and my loved ones. So my main area I work in now is religion, science, and technology. So I kind of have this background. In many ways, it wasn't really anything I reflected upon, but I kind of landed into. And now what I do is I provide learning opportunities or for Christian faculty at Christian universities to come and learn about this kind of area of science and religion. So this is people who might be philosophers, might be theologians, might be biblical scholars, but also scientists coming together, thinking about how we can live out our Christian faith in each of our unique and different places that we work. But I also have an interest in the nature of belief, faith, and atheism, and especially the kind of the future of faith and religion. So where is it that we're going? You know, what is the world going to look like in 10, 15, 20 years? What are those things we should be aware of as Christians? So where we're going to be going in this talk is I'm going to essentially just lay out what is religion and religious belief. We've heard lots of wonderful things previously. In many ways, I'll be touching on some of the same figures, the same concepts. So this is a kind of a reiteration, I guess, of that. And then I'll kind of move to a snapshot of traditional religiosity today, looking at it from a kind of global perspective. You know, what's really happening to religion? And then I'll kind of move and transition into this idea of religion, belief, and ideology. So moving beyond kind of traditional religion and thinking about religiosity as something which might be much more broad. And then I'll talk about atheism, ideologies, past and present, and then I'll kind of look at the future of atheism and ideology. So looking at what is religion and religious belief. So here are four theories. Emily spoke a bit about this yesterday. So Emile Durkheim, who was a French sociologist, lived most of his life in the 19th century and was a social psychologist and philosopher. So he said a religion is a unified system of beliefs. So it's a unified system of things that we believe in relative to sacred things. Beliefs and practices which unite in one single moral community. And what he really means by this kind of functionalism, is that religion is something, is a subset of society. The way we can understand religion is to understand how it functions and how it serves society. That it explains the social institutions in terms of the needs that the institutions would meet in society. So in many ways, religion helps to protect the social order. It helps to provide cohesion. It's in some ways, God is just the society writ large. So this is Durkheim's understanding. And so religion really serves four functions in society. One is disciplinary, so forcing or administrating discipline. So we saw this kind of being elucidated in the Princess Alice study, right? That if we have a God who can see everything, will it make us lead more moral lives? It brings cohesion. It brings people together. It's a strong bond. It really is. It's vitalizing. It makes people more lively and vigorous. We think of, you know, in ages past, all of the feasts. It was a time to let go. It was the social hub of most communities, and it kind of animated people to let go when they weren't working. And it's, according to Durkheim, is euphoric. It gives us a good feeling of happiness, confidence, well-being. If you guys don't understand any words that I'm saying or anything like this, feel free to raise your hand. I thought that might probably be important at some point. So moving on then from functionalist interpretations of religion, we're now looking at phenomenology. So phenomenology is the kind of the inward reflection about what does it feel like, what is it like on the inside to be religious. Rudolf Otto is an eminent German Lutheran theologian and was a scholar of comparative religion. He wrote the book Das Heilige, The Idea of the Holy, and he's known for that religion is more of the kind of internal experience. It's the numinous. He wants to say it can't be reduced to just the social or the functional, but the religious is something which is actually internal. It's actually an experience of a certain kind, and he wants to talk about it as this terrifying mystery, this kind of feeling of, what he says, being overwhelmed but also included in. It's a God who is wholly other than us, but also invites us into his life with him. And we also get this with Mircea Eliade, who was at the University of Chicago in the early 20th century, who's a Romanian historian of religion. And he was a leading interpreter of religious experience and established quite a few models in religious studies. And he's very similar to Rudolf Otto in that he wants to look at religion from the inside. What does it feel like to be religious? And he wants to say that religion is the kind of demarcation between the sacred and the profane. Profane, the sacred, but also that which is, or the profane is secular, but that which is also be kind of rejected. It's distinguished in many ways. So that's two approaches in phenomenology that look and try to interpret religion. Now, Emily looked at this in great detail yesterday, so I will go through this fairly quickly. So Freud essentially believed that God is just a father figure for adults, and a very negative interpretation of religion, that it really arises out of neuroses. It's our inability to grapple with our own individual existences in the world. Obviously, I think that's a very poor interpretation. In fact, many of these, I think, have some pretty poor drawbacks. William James said, religion shall mean for us the feeling, the acts, and experience of individual men in their solitude, so far as they apprehend themselves to stand in relation to whatever they consider to be divine. So religion is just people in relation to the divine. But William James, the varieties of religious experience, he wanted to say that there's multiple kinds of religious experience. It's not just one thing, but it might be different depending upon which culture, which people group, which faith tradition we look at. Whereas someone like Rudolf Otto might want to say religious experience is something which is a kernel of religious experience in every kind of faith, and that is similar in many ways. And we saw from Emily certain cognitive theories or evolutionary theories put forward by people like Pascal Boyer and Scott Atran, who argued that religion and magical thinking arises actually out of a byproduct of natural evolutionary forces. So we have had one of the things that Emily spoke about yesterday. And then others, such as Richard Sosis, that want to say that it's not just a byproduct of these kind of cognitive mechanisms, but it actually helped provide group cohesion and was actually advantageous. So those are just some theories related to psychology and evolution. One that I am quite amenable to, one that I quite like because it in some ways encapsulates what Linda was really talking about. So it's not just something which is just an experience one has, but it's an entire orientation. It's something which grounds our practices. It's things that provide meaning. So Paul Tillich was a famous German-American Christian philosopher and theologian, and was regarded as probably one of the most important theologians of the 20th century. Said that religion is the state of being grasped by an ultimate concern. So his ultimate concern will be really important, I think, throughout the rest of what I'm going to say, especially as it relates to it being a universal thing for human beings. So religion is the state of being grasped by an ultimate concern, a concern which qualifies all other concerns as preliminary, in which itself contains the answer to the question of the meaning of life. So an ultimate concern is total. Its object is experienced as numinous or holy, distinct from all profane and ordinary realities. In fact, it's so real and so valuable that in comparison, all other things appear empty and worthless. As such, it demands total surrender and promises total fulfillment. So these ultimate concerns manifest the unconditioned kind of existential, the lived realities towards which our entire lives were oriented. Does this make sense at all? Yes. Hopefully when we get to question and answers, this will become a bit more clear as well. So now I want to move on from kind of how certain people have understood religion and religiosity and by extension, faith and belief, to a kind of snapshot. So now we're moving into, well, what does religion or traditional religion look like today? And I think the public would have us know that essentially religion is on the decline. And so they espouse what is called the secularization thesis, which is that belief that as societies progress, particularly through modernization and rationalization, religion loses its authority in all aspects of life and governance. So this is a kind of common understanding that people want us to know that, you know what, this is the future of religion, is that, you know what, it's going away, we don't need it any longer. But what I'm going to kind of challenge is that really the case? So in the next few slides, we'll actually look at some hard data, kind of saying that, well, it's not just one thing if it is secularization. It depends upon where you're talking about. If you're talking about Turkey, that would look very different than it might be here in Norway, in Sweden, in France, or Germany. So secularization isn't just one thing. And it isn't just one thing which is driving it, technology or philosophy, but it's distinct strands of secularism. So this is a common understanding, but one which I think needs to be challenged. So here's an interesting image taken from the Pew Foundation, one of the largest social science foundations in America. 8 in 10 people practice religion in some form or another in the world today. That's a lot of people. That's the gross majority. And the 16% of people who don't engage in some kind of religious practices or have some form of religious beliefs. This is what the study said. So the world we live in is much more religious than actually public perception allows. All right, there's a lot of numbers up there. Can you guys see them? Okay. I figured since you're psychologists, you know, you're used to looking at tables, right? And, you know, statistics and whatnot. But really what's important up here is, so this is all the religions, or the major religions in the world along the left-hand side. We'd have the number of people that subscribe to that. And then you have the percentage of the whole. So that's how many of the religious people there were, and that's in 1970. And here we have it in 2010. So what's great about this is it shows us from 1970 to 2020, or to 2010, how things are changing in terms of religion. And the interesting thing right, is that Christians make up roughly a third of the overall religious population worldwide. So that's what you see in 2010, it's about 33%. And Islam is close behind at about 23%. Muslim is the second column down in 2010. But as you see over on the right-hand side, under Muslims, the rate 1970 to 2020, this is just, over here. But Islam is the fastest growing. And it's expected to continue being the fastest in the next decade. So that's what the next column is. But the interesting thing is actually its growth rate. So the two columns goes from 2.33 to 1.64. So it's increasing, but it's actually at a decreasing rate. So now let's look at Christianity specifically. Let's look at how Christianity has changed. So here we have two charts, one which is a regional distribution of Christians in 1910, so this was about 100 years ago, and then here it is in 2010. So where do you see the biggest decline?
Europe.
Yes, you see the most in Europe. And where do you see the kind of largest increases? Sub-Saharan Africa. And really, the Americas is much more South America than it is North America. So overall, the decline of European Christianity, the decline in European Christianity in the last century is a movement towards Africa, America, and Asia Pacific. So what's actually happening is we're getting this movement south of Christianity. So it's a move towards the global south. So thinking about these kinds of trends, what will the typical Christian look like in 15 to 20 years? They'll probably not be speaking any languages that came from Europe. They will probably have darker, skin tones. And actually, others that we find is that women on the rise are more in the pew. So it's going to be dark-skinned women who are the kind of make up the majority of Christianity. So here are some things that we've just learned in this last a few slides about a snapshot of religion today. So the center of gravity, so the heart of Christianity is moving towards the global south. Islam is on the rise. Secularization is not as bad as the public says. It's predominantly a European phenomenon rather than a global one. And something else I didn't really bring up is this rise of what are called the nuns. The nuns are basically those that in a research study, when they have to mark down their religious affiliation, they say none. So it's the rise of those who wouldn't ascribe to any official kind of religion. So that's quite interesting. And then we get a kind of greater religious diversity in the future, including those with no traditional faith. So it's this kind of fluid religious identity is something which is becoming much more apparent. In fact, one of the Pew research studies actually showed that in Christianity, we're at a time where over half of the people that began in one denomination will actually move to another denomination. So even in Christianity, you get this movement between different Christian faith traditions.
Denomination,
so Catholic, Protestant, Lutheran. So people that might start out as Catholics, so over half of the population of Christians will move at some time during their life to another denomination. Well, let's transition. Let's look at some of the more sophisticated ideologies that often take the place or fulfill the same role or function of religion. I'm sorry, that's the next slide. So let's look back at religiosity as a kind of universal feature of being human. So what many of those theorists said is it's something that all humans exhibit. It's what they all manifest. It's what they all have. Everybody's religious. The difference is just in how we express it. So I really want to kind of dial into, I really want to look at Tillich's idea of ultimate concern as the model
by which we can understand that religion is something that we all kind of have an impulse, a drive for. So it's this idea that belief is trust, right? So it's not just belief as an intellectual thing, but it's what we put a whole life into. It's what we're willing to die for in some ways. It's what we're willing to orientate our whole life and strive for. So it's a worldview, it's an existential orientation. So this opens up the possibility then of what Tillich calls quasi-religions or ideologies. So he says these quasi-religions are directed towards objects like the nation, towards science, towards society, or a highest ideal of humanity, which are then considered divine. So it takes the place of a traditional god. So even if someone professes atheism, as we saw with the talk that Emily gave, you know, really probing, are there really truly atheists? But what someone like Tillich tells us is it's not that they don't believe in a god, it's that they replace it with something else. They often adhere to a particular quasi-religion or an ideology. So here's a definition of an ideology. Does this make sense, an ideology, this term? Okay. So it's basically just a set of conscious or unconscious ideas which make up one's goals, expectations, and actions. So people draw ultimate meaning, ultimate final grounding meaning from these ideologies and beliefs. They ascribe ultimate value to them in the same way that others do for traditional religions. So now I want to look at some of these more sophisticated ideologies that have often taken the place of traditional religions and that fulfill the same function or role. So Marxism, very, very large in the 20th century. An ideology and method of social analysis. So it concentrates on social inequality, right, between classes, and it uses a materialist, so a physical understanding of history, and proposes a transformation of society. So this is Marxists make society, make the overthrowing of the bourgeoisie their ultimate end. It's what they believe in, the zealots of Marxism. I mean, I think of the Russian Revolution, right? Had almost very religious overtones, right? The Soviet Union, disallowed all the religious beliefs as if showing that, no, we are the, should be the only goal in the end of human beings. And so really, Marxism is a vision of history and anthropology, so idea of history and human beings, that's based upon economics. So the real driving feature of history and who we are is exchange, it's money, it's the economy, it's... So famous proponents are Lenin, Mao Zedong in China, Leon Trotsky. As we saw, this is really influential in the 20th century politics and economics. And I think it's rather reductionistic in terms of not allowing the kind of human experience to have choices outside of that which is economic. But it's insightful at the same time. I mean, there are actually quite a few Christians in the 20th century who are heavily influenced by Marxism, people like Jacques Ellul, who was a famous French reformed sociologist, Dorothy Day and the Catholic Workers were. So Marxism brought back this kind of social awareness of what the gospel is all about, that God came to the marginalized to help them. Now, Marxism was in some sense a reminder of what Christianity was actually all about, of helping those who are marginalized in society. Another very, very large one, in fact, I would say probably the largest today in terms of ideologies, what people really believe in, is liberal humanism. So liberal humanism is really just a system of thought that rejects religious beliefs and centers on humans and their values, capacities, and worth. The doctrine emphasizes a person's capacity for self-realization through reason. It's just the idea that, well, human beings are God, that if we are all there is, then it's our responsibility to make the world better. And this is primarily through the realization, through reason, that is what is sets us apart from other species, and is a wonderful thing. So they're devoted to things like human progress. So oftentimes one of their key doctrines is this myth of progress that throughout the centuries that we're progressing towards that which is better, because we're now rationally reflecting, you know, on our situation and not living according to you know, some kind of primitive beliefs. And so they're devoted to rational thinking, human progress, and the flourishing of the human species for its own sake. It celebrates things like freedom, independence, and choice. Liberal humanism is quite broad, and so here are some famous proponents, but actually they might have very different perspectives on what that humanism might look like. So Jean-Paul Sartre, a famous French existentialist, would probably disagree on quite a bit with someone like Noam Chomsky, probably because of how much he focuses on the radicality of human freedom. But you get some really contemporary advocates of it, like Steven Pinker. So this is very popular in Europe and actually underlies, I think, a lot of our civic public institutions, that this is what they think is valid and good. Now, the third that I want to look at, which is actually probably more represented in the public than it is probably believed in. So I don't really think there's lots of people that actually think this, but this is often the way that science and scientists are presented to the rest of the world. So this is scientism. So scientism is the view that the characteristic inductive methods of the natural sciences, so it's what makes science science, the scientific method, are the only source of genuine factual knowledge. And in particular, that they alone can yield true knowledge about man and society. So in many ways, so here are some pretty heavy philosophical terms, what we would call methodological naturalism and metaphysical naturalism. So methodological naturalism just means in science we are going to limit the kinds of causes that we're going to look at to just those things which are natural or physical. So it's a method, it's just something we've decided. Whereas people who are subscribed to scientism want to ascribe to what's called metaphysical naturalism, which is that there's only those kinds of causes in the world, whereas the first is just about making a claim that we're just going to do this to see where it brings us, whereas the last is a philosophical position and start to turn into an ideology. So it's often criticized for its reductionism, as you can imagine. People are more than just biology and physical makeup. So some famous proponents, people like Richard Dawkins, Daniel Dennett, and Alexander Rosenberg, who's a famous philosopher, biologist. And the thing is, this is really just largely based on a poor understanding of the scope, the aims, the boundaries of what science can tell us. It's a poor philosophy of science. So that was three really important ideologies, which I think are kind of seen in the public eye today. So let's look at a kind of, if I can draw some conclusions as to where I think the kind of the future of atheism and ideology are going, what would I say? Well, I think what we're seeing really in the last kind of 2 years is a shift from what is called militant New Atheism. Are you familiar with the New Atheists? So people like Richard Dawkins. This idea that they're what Emily wanted to define as anti-theism. So this kind of militant against, you know, kind of religion to more nuanced versions of atheism that are actually happy to kind of say that, you know, religion has some really important things to tell us and to teach us, that they're religiously informed. So this is really represented by a Swiss popular philosopher called Alain de Botton, who wrote a book called Religion for Atheists. And essentially, he's a liberal humanist. But he says, you know what? Religions are very smart at providing wonderful things for human beings. It draws people together. And we shouldn't look down upon what they can actually provide to us. So I think the future of atheism is that it defines itself, or that it's recognizing that atheism that defines itself primarily against religion is just not something sustainable. That this is what they're finding, is it's hard to be an atheist on your own. That it needs something to believe in. And so this is where the whole idea that you can't really find too many true atheists, because we have this religious impulse that we need to fill with something, to orientate our lives. So a kind of brief two movements that I think will probably continue into the future. One is, I think liberal humanism is quite strong in Europe, and because it has such a strong basis in our civic and political institutions, I think that's pretty much here to stay. But another is something that I work on specifically as well, which is called transhumanism. So you can kind of tell what it means just based upon the different parts of the word. So it's based upon humanism, this idea that rationality, the human being is all there is, but they advocate the acceleration of transcending what it means to be a human being. So they're happy to use certain kinds of biotechnologies, to kind of engage with our technologies to enhance what it means to be a human being. So that just gives you where I think atheism and ideology are going. So that's the end of this talk. Here are some resources, if you're so inclined, that come from various parts of the talk. The more web-based ones are here on the bottom. So here are some great things if you want to know more about kind of Christianity in the global context, Rise of the Nuns. The blog, The Imminent Frame, is very good for looking at secularization and whatnot. So that's the end. Thank you.